This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, welcome once again to another edition of Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. This is Joy's very own, one and only, in fact, automotive program. We like to talk about cars, and we hope that you like to listen to us talking about cars, because otherwise we wouldn't have a lot to do right now on a Saturday afternoon. So thank you for keeping us busy, quite frankly. My name is Tim Nicholson.
I'm all right.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, just all right.
Just all right. Not amazing.
Just, you know, just fine.
Yeah. It's a bit like that. Today. Yeah. Thanks, Luke.
You're welcome.
Excellent. And I am joined, of course, today by Mike Costello. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, just all right.
Just all right. Not amazing.
Just, you know, just fine.
Yeah. It's a bit like that today, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel the same. Well, I hope Byron Matthew Darkus, are you feeling a little bit more chipper than we are?
I am super fantastic.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm good. I'm good. I'm very good.
A European version of Byron.
It's true.
Was that a reference?
Yes, because I've been driving a Volkswagen up.
Oh.
Yes, it's 2012. I've been driving a Volkswagen up the last couple of days.
Incidentally, that makes a fantastic used car buy these days, the up. You can get them really, really, really cheap.
Certainly, oh, my God. That is so right. And that's part of the reason why I've been driving one.
Did you buy one?
No. I've borrowed one.
You would, though.
And I totally would. And my friend often refers to it as the up because it's German and it looks kind of, she talks about it as if Arnie is driving it, so she goes up. Volkswagen up.
I see.
By the way, I would love to see Arnold Schwarzenegger driving an up. He'd barely fit. That would be hilarious.
I would love to see him driving anything.
Should have been in the advertising campaign.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
He used to get those muscles up, you know, when he was a bodybuilder, didn't he?
He did.
Yes.
They were big.
Yeah,
Anyway, enough of Arnie. I hope you boys are well. We've had a very big week, of course, in automotive, all things automotive, actually, locally and abroad and all that kind of thing. And we're going to be talking about a lot of that today. We're also going to be talking about possibly one of the most anticipated cars to arrive in Australia this year. I'm talking, of course, about the Suzuki Celerio.
Yes.
It is. Honestly, it is.
Celerio, short for Celestial River or Rio. The Rio is in Spanish. So that's what Celerio stands for.
Oh,
so.
Dear.
Air Suzuki, makers of the Liana, life in the new age, have come up with a new doozy. The Celerio.
Life in the new age.
There you go, folks.
What would that be like?
One day you guys are going to be, listeners, ladies, gentlemen, and undecided and proudly in the middle, you guys will be at a trivia night and someone will ask, what does Liana stand for? And you will know and you'll win a bottle of champagne and you'll thank Tim, Mike and myself.
It's true. Yes.
I think only you go to trivia nights where obscure car names would be questions.
Oh, I wish. They never.
No, yeah.
You would kill it.
I know. I could live off of the champagne.
It's true.
If I was in a trivia night and they ask car questions and I saw you in the corner on another team, I'd just get up and walk out because I wouldn't stand a chance.
I'd lose. It's true.
If people usually say that when I used to be single in bars. In the corner, they'd walk right out.
Not true. It's not true. But of course, we are talking about another supercar today. I got behind the wheel of a Ferrari F12 Berlinetta recently, which scared the pants off me, and I'll be talking about that a little bit later on.
And he hasn't put them back on.
I have not. Let me tell you. I am pantless. I'm one of those people at a nude beach who wears just a t-shirt. Nothing below. Not a good look. Lots more, of course, coming up, so make sure you stick around.
Coming up.
Also, you can always text in 0427JOY949 is the text line, or email onair@joy.org.au. If you've got any questions, need some tips or something like that, just ask us. We are here to help you sometimes when we feel like it. And we feel like it today, so feel free to ask away. Now, boys, so a little bit of local news coming from local, because that's where we are. We're in Australia. This week from the government, the federal government, bit of controversy. So we've talked about grey imports, so importing used cars into Australia, and that's been kind of knocked on the head. But here's a new one. Let's import some new cars from other dealerships overseas. What the hell's going on, guys?
So, the government came out this week. Federal Minister Jamie Briggs said that the government is very interested in letting people buy brand new cars or cars that have less than 4,000 Ks on the clock from anywhere they want, which the theory would be that cars are apparently much cheaper overseas, and if you can go and buy them and bring them in, you win. Or you can buy some obscure, weird car that's sold overseas, such as a Japanese K car, that you can't get here. And so the variety expands. And the theory is cars become cheaper, there's more choice, people can do what they want, all is good. Yeah. However, there are a couple of problems with it that come out immediately. First of all, you really can't buy a car from a dealership overseas new and bring it into the country. A lot of dealers have issues with their franchise agreements that forbid them from selling cars for export. Mm-hmm. And the other one is, it's a giant furphy that cars overseas are really a whole lot cheaper than they are here, unless you start talking about cars that are above, say, 100, 150 grand. So the price of a Golf in Europe and a Golf here, once you've got spec for spec adjusted, currency adjusted, taxes paid, import costs paid, insurance covered, really isn't going to be that different. And don't forget, if you bring a car in from overseas, you're not going to have the right warranty coverage. The dealers here aren't going to want to know you. You've got a car that probably isn't set up for Australia the way an Australian car would be. So cars that are sold here have different air conditioning systems, different nav systems. There's a whole bunch of problems with this. And the government coming out and saying during the week they want to do it really shows they kind of haven't done their homework on some of the more difficult areas of this.
Government not doing their homework. Well,
it sounds great and it sounds awesome. You can go to Japan, you can buy some wacky crazy car that's never been sold here, and that idea is very appealing to me, but there are a lot of problems too.
You can buy a Subaru Vivio Bistro.
Totes.
A what?
A Subaru Vivio Bistro or a Matsuyuko Vute. All those obscure Japanese and
these
more.
Are words, just
these words that I pulled out of. No, but they do exist.
We need to do a sequel to the wackiest car names. Was the last thing? The last one it was the Isuzu Bighorn, wasn't it?
Oh God, I love the Bighorn, the car. Why are they proposing this then? Is this purely a lack of kind of research, or what benefits would the government see coming from this?
Well, it wouldn't be like a policy now, would it? Oh no, not at all.
No,
I think if I was slightly cynical about it, I would say the most beneficial part of this program is that it will make really, really, really expensive cars cheaper, because the only way you're going to save money is like a Porsche 911 in Europe is probably a lot cheaper than it is here. Because if, but you know, you bring your car here, even if you do pay luxury car tax, even if you do pay all the charges, you'll probably get a cheaper super luxury car. Who buys super luxury cars? The kind of people the government tends to look after more than most. So if I was cynical, I would say it might be to help out your mates. Of course, you know, that might just be my theory.
Yeah.
But look, honestly, I don't know. In theory, you get more cars and you possibly get them cheaper, but I don't think it's going to really work out that way. I could be wrong, but you know, it might also just be a distraction from the real things that they aren't doing. Maybe.
Oh, who would possibly not being cynical at all?
No,
not at all.
Let's not do anything about climate change and let's distract people with cheap cars. I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it.
And it's interesting, though, that they're, I guess because they have kind of shut down the idea of bringing in used cars, which happens in New Zealand, and that's flooded the market. And I think somebody was saying recently it's like 50% of the market or something, or more than 50% of the New Zealand market is...
Yeah, grey imports.
Used cars, grey imports from
other countries. Thankfully, the government says they don't want to do that. So this is only new cars. So if you want to go and buy that 1997 Toyota Tercel that you had your heart set on, I'm sorry.
I love Tercel.
You really can't.
We'd love to hear what you think about this. I mean, do you think this should go ahead, or do you think it would have a detrimental effect on dealers and the car makers that are here, even as importers? 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at org.au. We would love to hear from you, as always. Some other weird stuff happening this week, though, guys, is we all know ANCAP. They are the crash test safety body, the watchdog, if you like, and they do tests, and they take some tests from Europe, and then they, you know, use them here as well, so you get a star rating, blah, 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 blah. Everyone goes on about a five-star rating, and there were some reasonably controversial results this week from ANCAP, one of which was the BMW i3 got a four-star rating in Europe, and it got a five-star rating here, is that right, in Australia?
Yeah.
And then, what was the other one?
So the 2 Series Active Tourer the opposite. You got 5 in Europe and 4 here. So ANCAP wants to eventually get to a point where all of its ratings are basically the same as they are in Europe. But right now there are some big differences. But, you know, due to minutiae and small, you know, points requirements, and they require X amount of points for X test, blah, blah, blah. I won't go into too much detail. Cars that get 4 in Europe can get 5 here, and vice versa. All the while, a family-oriented crossover four-wheel drive, the Renault Captur, with no rear airbags whatsoever, can get 5 stars, and the BMW 2 Series Active Tourer, a fundamentally similar car that has the airbags, doesn't. Obviously, safety is not just about airbags, but the fact that there's no consistency across ratings. So in Europe, a car can be X amount of safety, and in Australia, the exact same car is classified as an unsafe vehicle. It kind of highlights that they're really not talking to each other enough. There are a whole lot of discrepancies between the two, and in the end, the only person that really loses is the buyer.
Yeah.
Because you're not sure, is my car safe, is it not safe? I have no idea.
I mean, there's been talk about the future of ANCAP in Australia before. I mean, is this another kind of like, come on, guys, what the hell's going on down there situation? I mean, are we heading towards the end of localised crash testing? Is that what's going to happen eventually, anyone?
Well, it certainly does seem to be heading in that direction. And as we move to being a full-line importer nation, you've got to ask, you know, what's the point of it? I mean, really, if the Europeans and... You know, the Americans, look, it needs to be globally. I think it needs to be globally consistent, because the Americans have their own, of course, the NHTSA and their other government body whose name escapes me. Anyway, there needs to be just a global consistent standard for cars that are sold globally. It's not rocket science. And then maybe this whole kind of crash test dummies issue can be resolved.
Well, that's it. Well, we will certainly see what happens there. Tim, Mike, and I nearly said Dan, and Byron with you here.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If only Dan, I look like Dan.
Well.
Then I would be, well, I'd be younger and good, better looking and taller and skinnier.
Just as handsome.
Oh, stop it.
Stop it. Now, some news from overseas now, guys. We're going to head to the world of Volkswagen, so that would be Germany. The huge reveal this week, of course, very, very different design than we've seen before from them. That is, of course, the Volkswagen Transporter that looks like the last few Volkswagen Transporters. So this is the big van they've got. You've really got to look hard to tell the difference, don't you?
Oh, you do. But, you know, Transporters, Volkswagens, Combis, you know, they have such a history and heritage, not just in Australia, but around the world. And, you know, once they get under your skin, they stay under your skin.
Really?
And so this is really exciting. So even though you might think, oh, God, you guys are talking about politics, then you're talking about crash testing, and now you're talking about vans. The vans are awesome. And, you know, it's a new Transporter. It'll go well. It'll stop well. It'll just sip fuel like a sipper of fueler. You know, it'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. And yes, it does look, its evolution is glacial, but how much can a box not look like a box on wheels? Eh?
Oh, I think you said wheels.
Yes.
I'm just sad they don't make it look like the original Combi.
Yeah.
That's such an iconic design. Why can't they make it look like that? They did it with the Beetle, you know, bring back the Combi. They tried and they didn't really go through with it.
Well, a lot of listeners may remember that in 2001 at the Detroit show, Volkswagen did show something that was Combi-esque, like the original Combi, and they decided not to build it, I think, for a reason. I think that, you know, nostalgia isn't always necessarily... translate into, you know, a business case that might work. And, you know, vans have to perform, you know, pretty much functionally in their best possible way. And I think that, you know, this is fine. I was looking at it for a long time, I've got to say. And at first I thought it does look pretty similar, but, you know, it does have its kind of golf-esque kind of evolution going on about it.
They don't do anything outrageous, do they? That's what we're used to. But they do have some interesting stuff going on behind the scenes over at Volkswagen at the moment. There's I don't want to say bitch fight. What's the word? The claws are out.
Yeah,
the claws are definitely out. It's
Crystal versus Alexis. That's what it is.
So much.
Yes.
Sydney versus Amanda. If we're talking Melrose Place.
Bring it
into the 90s.
Yeah, could bring it into the 2000s. It's maybe,
Cookie versus somebody on that show about the people. Well, I can't even remember.
Oh, I was going to say Angelina, the Friends woman.
Oh, yes, name Jennifer Aniston. Yeah, yeah, somebody. But yeah, look, there's some stuff going on. So it's a bit interesting. So it's basically the chairman is trying to take on the CEO of the Volkswagen Group. What's going on?
I don't know. I haven't read a whole lot about it. I think it was a throwaway line more than anything else. Yeah. So the chairman of Volkswagen, one of the world's biggest companies of any sort, let alone car companies, was asked this week if he backed the CEO of Volkswagen, and he said he didn't.
He's distancing.
They're obviously
himself.
Having a little bit of a fight with each other right now. So Volkswagen, the Volkswagen Group is doing really well, but mostly because of Audi and Porsche and Lamborghini, all its other brands. Volkswagen isn't doing that well. It's not making as much money as it should be for a whole bunch of reasons. Evidently, Martin Winterkorn, Dr. Professor Martin Winterkorn, who runs Volkswagen, isn't in the good books at the moment.
Yes, Nurse Professor Dr. Sister Winterkorn may not be in the good books, but people have to remember that Volkswagen is completely renewing its model line with investing in new technology like MQB and all that stuff that is providing lighter, more efficient cars. And, give the guy a break.
Completely agree. Yeah, totally agree. I honestly think that Piëch, the big boss, the number one man, maybe just had a bad day. He was asked a question by a reporter at the wrong time, let his, slip of the tongue. Mm. But, even one word from somebody like that causes chaos and the share price has gone crazy. And I just love the idea of two, aged German people yelling at each other in a room. It's kind of
amazing. Oh, no, you didn't. That's all I can say. Yeah, totally. It's just kind of something we don't really see that often. So, absolutely. Now, guys, we're going to move right along. To something sexy. Something pretty sexy. And I think
you're bringing sexy back.
I am bringing sexy back, thanks to the good people at Suzuki. So I am talking, of course, about the little Solerio. Now, this is a tiny little light car. We call it a micro car I think. So it's a Mirage competitor, all that kind of thing. It's very small. It's very cheap. And it almost, not almost didn't make it here, but it had a bit of almost aborted launch, didn't it?
Controversy has surrounded the Suzuki Celestial Rio. Celestial River, and not just because of its silly name and its looks, which some people think is functional. Other people think it looks like a hemorrhoid on wheels. But I've got to say that the Solerio is pretty much one of the surprise packages of this year. Now, I know how much you love a surprise package, Tim, and the Solerio does deliver. True. It does. What looks like it might be a most boring city car. It actually turns out to be something that's a bit of a TARDIS inside. TARDIS, not TARTIS. No. In that it is ruby and quiet and refined. But it's really the way it drives, which Mike and I were talking about earlier off air. It's the way that it drives that most impresses people who expect something less and delivered something more.
So, this vehicle, how much are we looking at for this kind of thing?
$13,000 drive away.
For the manual. $14,000 drive away for the CVT auto.
That's pretty good value.
Damn cheap.
It really is. And one of the amazing things is I'm fairly tall, I guess, taller than average, and I can sit behind myself. So, I'm driving in my normal driving position, and I can sit in the back seat behind where I would have the chair. I can't do that in an average small car.
Yeah.
Even in something like a Golf, it's just okay. In this thing, I can do it really easily. It's just bizarre. It's an absolute Mary Poppins bag on wheels.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. I think the biggest story with that car also is the fact that, the sales in that end of the market, really, really cheap micro cars, as I call them, are plummeting. They're absolutely plummeting. They're down 60% this year. They're down 50% last year. But there are a lot of good cars out there. There's a new Mitsubishi Micro, updated Nissan Micro, I should say, launching next week. Mitsubishi Mirage, a little ordinary. But there's a Solerio, there's a Fiat 500. There's a whole bunch of really worthy cars that people aren't buying, and it's kind of a shame.
Yeah.
Well, Mirage is less than worthy, by the way. I just want to throw in my...
Is it really?
Okay. I think it's rubbish.
Okay.
Sorry, you shouldn't say that, but it is. Mitsubishi should make better cars, but that's probably a conversation for another day.
She's on a rant.
I am when it comes to the Mitsubishi, but Mike's right. The Solerio is good enough to, to restart, put a B under the bonnet of the sub-B segment. It should just, people should consider the Suzuki Solerio if they were going to buy, like, a 12,000 $10,000 used car. It's that good.
Wow.
Now, earlier I started talking about how it there was some controversy surrounding it. The controversy is, or was rather, that back in January, it failed a couple of high-speed brake tests in Europe, in the UK, in fact. Autocar magazine have this method where they stomp on the brakes pretty much at 100 or, you know, 70 or 60 miles per hour, so over 100 kilometers an hour. Anyway, these things did not stop. And Suzuki, to their credit, just pulled the car from sales straight away in the UK. And within days, they found the problem. It was basically, it had to do with the pedal structure, not the brakes themselves, and they fixed it. So a lot of you people out there who follow cars might have heard some, you know, there was a bit of, you know, some rumblings about the Suzuki Celerio and reliability. That's the issue. It was fixed straight away. Our cars do not suffer from that problem. I've tested that car for quite a few of them, and I have stomped on the brakes, and it just stops. It stops as well as you'd expect. So,
were you wearing heels?
Yes, I was wearing slingbacks. Yes, yes. Do you have a problem with that?
No, I certainly don't. I support it 100%.
And what are you wearing? Oh, no, I can see you're wearing just your t-shirt and nothing else. That's right.
We've gone on a tangent.
So anyway, so I rate it. So the Suzuki Celerio, check it out. Buy one over a Mirage, definitely.
But what I found funny with this car, I remember seeing it launched at some motor show, and they ripped the covers off, and it was like
Geneva 2014.
Is that what it was? Yeah. And I was like, come on, guys. There's got to be. This is the design you've got for your global micro car. It's a pretty drab looking thing, and I think that the Alto, though, so the car it replaces, it's actually a really cute looking thing. But my understanding is it's a bit of an SH1 T box.
The Alto it suffers at the altar of style in that it's hard to see out of its thick pillars and small doors, and it doesn't really translate very well as a car for, you know, taller folk like Mike. You wouldn't be able to sit beside yourself, let alone behind yourself. It's really badly packaged. The Suzuki, the Celerio, you know, I've been looking at it a lot. I've literally driven four over the last 5 weeks, just for various reasons, and the styling does grow on me. It's not beautiful. It never will be beautiful, but it's functional, and it's beautiful in the way it steers and the way it rides. It rides like an old French car does in the city. It is such a hoot. You know,
that's a really good point. The urban ride.
It rides fantastic. Brilliant. It's such a hoot on the open road. We've taken it on our test loops, which has corners with jagged edges and that sort of thing, and it doesn't fall into the same issues that other small cars do of that price range. Like the steering feels firm, and the car it's controllable at speed. It's just a beauty. And at one liter three-pot engine is just. It just punches well above its weight in terms of performance and fuel consumption.
Well, it helps that the car weighs 800 kilos, which is
840 kilograms,
in fact. Which is bonkers, isn't it? Well, there you go.
That's how much the first Golf weighed in 1974.
Oh. That's how much I weigh after dinner.
Right.
Quite frankly, I'll be honest with you. So maybe check this out instead of going for a small secondhand thing. Maybe we're finally getting to the point where we can recommend a tiny, tiny car and go, this is a good thing. That's exciting.
Yep.
That's good. Yep. What else is exciting is the fact that you are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. See Mike and Byron here with you, talking cars. We've had a text in from Jeff from the Gold Coast. Lovely, Jeff. Thank you for texting in. Talking about the potential new car imports from overseas the government have been talking about. We mentioned it at the start of the show. The new car thing won't be of any benefit to 99% of people looking to buy a new car. The used car import laws are the ones that need to change. If there's a car from 10 to 15 years ago that wasn't sold here, we should be allowed to bring it in. As long as they meet safety requirements, it shouldn't matter. Apparently, Canada has a 15-year rule as well.
I totally agree.
Yeah?
I spend so much time on Europe, Trade Me New Zealand, you know, that website. It's like... Yeah,
what kind of website is that? Trade Me New Zealand.
When I was talking about cars, Trade Me New Zealand's a great used car site. I look at things that we never got and thinking, oh God, I'd love to get that, you know, that Sunbeam Minx or Hillman Minx coupe, you know, that we could, and that's over 15 years old and it meets no safety standards, but geez, it It's a sexy little car.
Mike, do you get the feeling that that is Byron's idea of porn? Is like trawling like car websites?
Kind of do. Yeah. I feel like he, you know, has safe search off.
He looks at that website. I totally
he has an incognito window and closes the door.
Yeah, but are we? Well, I for one totally agree with you, Jeff from Gold Coast.
No, I do too, Jeff. I think you've got the right end of this one. I think if anything's going to be relaxed, it should be the used cars. Yeah, for sure.
Makes more sense. Makes sense.
We can bring in a Fiat Multiplier from New Zealand, for instance.
Wow.
2003.
Absolutely. There's one around the corner from my house, and whoever you are, if you're listening by any chance, you are the best, and I want to drive that car.
You've been warned.
Absolutely.
So, boys, moving on a little bit. So, a couple of weeks ago, I was very, very lucky. It was over the Grand Prix weekend, in fact, you'll find. I was very lucky to drive a Ferrari F12 Berlinetta. Now, that is a V12 powered car. It is pretty silly, and it is close to $700,000 worth of car. Now, I don't know about you guys, but the idea of that essentially had me in sweats, and I basically had an anxiety attack. And then I picked the car up from the dealership, which is in Richmond, and drove in peak hour traffic down Swan Street and then up Hunt Road, where there was roadworks and there were cars everywhere. And it was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. This should be a joy. This should be exciting. I should be like, oh my God, I'm driving a Ferrari. But the 2 to 3 days, however long I had that car, it wasn't a nightmare. That is extreme to say that. But it's the best car I've ever driven in my life. It was off the chart. But it was just so stressful.
I relate.
Well, they're first world problems coming through from the boys from Joy. I keep it real, talking about Suzuki Solero, and they talk about the absolute agony of driving a Ferrari for
it's true.
A few it's days. Funny, like, because all of us are working motoring riders, and I had the same Ferrari as you a little bit after you had it, but I think all three of us are quite aligned in the fact that among the motoring fraternity, we're probably relatively not plugged into supercars. No. I don't particularly. Is that a weird thing on a racetrack? Yeah. Yeah, awesome. Mm. But I'm always scared I'm going to, you know, scratch a rim or dent it or do something. I'd never do that to cars of any sort. I don't know why I'm afraid I'll do it to a Ferrari, but hey, the consequences are so high. And the other part is I feel like a real berk.
Yeah.
Driving around in a Ferrari or something, some kind of high-end Porsche.
Yep.
As a guy in his 20s, I feel a bit silly.
But it
doesn't look right.
Because people look at you and I have that feeling as well. I feel very insecure about it because I feel like people are going, oh, what a wanker.
And they would be right.
Yeah, they would be right. Well, I'm usually at it while I'm driving. No, that's not true. But no, there is that perception of a Ferrari driver, which also doesn't help you when you're out on the road. Because what I found, that if you were on a 2 or 3 lane road, you know, it was an 80 kilometer zone or whatever, you'd have maybe some dude in a VP Commodore pulling up next to you and somebody in a Hyundai XL on the other side. And they'd be like, oh, what a dick. What a dick in his Ferrari. I'm going to teach him something by going really fast at this light. And which, of course, I would destroy them. But there is that real attitude of kind of hatred towards you for driving a Ferrari. And I constantly, every time I'd have to speak to somebody about it, had to tell them, it's not my car, guys.
Yep. Hey, but you know what's queer about that?
No,
let me tell you, because you know, I'm a specialist in this sort of queer sort of stuff. Let me tell you what I think is really queer about that. I was driving recently a Tesla.
Ooh.
A Tesla Model S. Now, I know we've spoken about this before on the show, about Teslas and how great they are. But I didn't get any of that.
Oh, okay.
People were applauding the fact that, you know, someone was driving an electric car that really stuck it up the man, and not in a good way, you know? Just these cars are up-spec 5 Series BMW price, but, you know, they're pure electric, and you can drive up to 504 kilometres in them, and they go from 0 to 100 in 4.8 seconds, or the one I did could anyway. And I didn't get any of that kind of aggro.
People love that car.
Yeah. And, you know, that. I mean, this is a different topic now, but, you know, talking about people that, you know, the government not doing enough for climate change and that sort of thing. I think people really are switched onto that. And I think that when they see something like a Tesla or a Nissan Leaf or even a Mitsubishi i-MiEV or those sort of things, they think, yeah, you know, with this, we want to see something that pushes forward, not just, you know, is a statement of wealth. And I think that's the difference between maybe that Ferrari and that Tesla.
Yeah, potentially. Look, and I think it is. It's interesting, the attention I got. I felt like a superstar driving it. And for the first little while, it was kind of, I didn't mind it. You know, everyone talks to you, everyone looks at you. There were some really hot dudes that asked me questions. I was happy to talk to those hot dudes. But then yes. It got to the point after a while, like after maybe the second day, it was like I was somewhere out, near Hillsville or something, and I parked the car, and people would park next to you to talk to you about the car. I had tried to have lunch. I was just trying to read the paper, and the entire cafe was talking to me about the car. And I shouldn't complain because, again, it was the most ferocious thing I've ever driven. I've never felt like that behind the wheel of anything in my life, and I doubt that I ever will. It was so incredible. It was off the chart, amazing. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But I was kind of glad to give those keys back, guys. I feel like an dick for saying that, but there you go.
Well, you know, it was at least good for you to troll some building sites with that, right, in the interim.
So, listeners, hey, if you want to drive a Ferrari for free, contact him and he'll give it to you.
But look, in saying that, if you've got a spare $700,000, just go and buy one of these things and screw everyone else. It's the most incredible thing I've ever been in. It's amazing.
Absolutely, it is. And it looks like...
Oh, she's a stunner. Yeah. She is a stunner.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, the trials and tribulations of being me, basically. But, I mean, did you guys have, like, a fantasy supercar growing up? Was there something in your head? Because, again, it's like, I'm with you, Mike. I'd be much happier in an everyday kind of car. But, obviously, when I was growing up, I was all about a Lamborghini Countach.
Isn't that strange? I'm shocked to hear that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
After all that, I thought maybe you would have said something non-supercar-ish.
Well, I also had my favourite Matchbox car was a gold Peugeot 504. So, I mean, you know.
He's
a boy after my own heart, folks, because that's what I drive. A goldish, but a beige Peugeot 504.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes.
But did you guys, was there a fantasy car? Yes.
I was never a supercar guy back in the day at all. Not even close. I always... God, I don't even remember what I was into. It changed so often. Every week I had a new passion car that I'd, be obsessed with. But it was very rarely a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or something like that.
Okay. I think that I was into everything. Like Mike's changed weekly. But the things that I remember, like in terms of expensive cars, I really wanted to be Stephanie Powers in Heart to Heart driving that Mercedes SL.
Oh,
yes.
The beautiful.
Show my age here. Also, in Dynasty, if we go, maybe go back to Dynasty, one of Crystal's lovers, the doctor, used to drive a DeLorean, DMC DeLorean. And this is before Back to the Future, and this is, before they went bankrupt. And I used to lust over that. And the third car I used to lust over was what? Maddie drove on Moonlighting.
What was that?
Simple Shepherd.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, he used to drive a BMW 635 iCoupe.
Nice.
And that was what I wanted.
Oh, my God.
BMW 635 iCoupe. But then I also wanted a Golf, and I wanted a Mini, and I wanted... Yeah. I want to wear a Mini, all that stuff. So it was...
I think it'd be easy to ask you what you didn't want, Byron.
I didn't want... I guess I didn't want a Lamborghini Countach is my answer. That's a short answer.
I've still got a picture of a Lamborghini Countach in my spare room at home.
Oh.
My boyfriend does not like it.
Yeah. That's the boy from Hamilton. You can take the boy out of Hamilton, but you can't take Hamilton out of the boy.
That's very, very true. Now, you are on Fender Bender. Very shortly, we're going to be talking BMWs, sexy BMWs. So make sure you stick around. This is Fender Bender. You guys.
Yep.
I believe you were heading down to Tassie this week and had some SUV time, but not as we know it.
Yeah, so we were both attending the BMW event at the start of the week in Tasmania for two of the most pointless cars that have ever been conceived. We have differing opinions on the efficacy of the
we do.
Those cars.
Mike and I do not agree on every aspect of these cars, but I think we both will agree that Lake St. Clair in Tasmania is just one of the greatest places in the world. And we stayed at the Pump House Hotel, which
still makes me laugh.
It just rocked. A hotel built in 1940. It was an old pump house. At the end, in the lake, was just divine. Let me just say, it's one of the best places I've ever stayed. But
wow.
And I'm not getting paid to say that, but just to let you know.
What's that money coming out of your pocket there?
That's not money, honey.
Oh, dear. Now, what were these cars you talk about?
Okay, so we all know the BMW X5. Some might know the X6. It's that X5 with a chopped roof that looks sort of vaguely coupe-ish, but with four doors.
Mm.
Really weird, odd car that most people don't get, and some people do. And these are the hardcore versions. So BMW M, obviously, is the organisation behind that, so it's their performance wing. 423 kilowatts and 750 newton meters. So
Jesus.
They are the most potent BMWs ever, with the exception of one very limited special edition M5 that came out by last year.
By turbo. That's what I'm trying to say. They're by turbo, 4.4 litre V8s, and that's what makes them.
So identical engines in both
basically
cars.
Basically, what they've done is they've taken an M5, which is the... that engine, that crazy engine from the M5, shoved it under the bonnet of an X5 and an X6, fitted a torque converter rather than a dual clutch automatic because it can't handle the extra torque that the SUVs have, fitted it to an X-Drive fully variable all-wheel drive system, and essentially developed what BMW pitches as a SUV developed for the racetrack, which is a pretty incongruous proposition. What are your thoughts, Byron?
Yes, well, my thoughts are that if you're looking for the fastest accelerating SUV in the world at the moment, you could buy the $280,000 Porsche Cayenne Turbo S, or for $100,000 less, you can buy the $180,000 BMW X5 M. And that makes the latter a bit of a bargain, just in that crazy sphere of relativity, like relatively speaking, it's a bargain. And it is fast and aggressive and absolutely, it's a monster off the line, and it grips the road and it just absolutely warps time and space because you sit up high, the sky is coming, I mean, the scenery is coming towards you, yet you're ensconced safely in this all-wheel drive monster of a car that just kind of just pushes the world out the way. Having said that, I hated the ride. I hated the transmission. It worked really well, but the lever itself, they've put in this joystick type lever, which drove me nuts.
Yeah, same.
What do you mean?
Well, it doesn't have a conventional, well, there's certain conventional kinds of gates that we're used to, and this one doesn't have that. So you find yourself trying to engage drive and you're engaging neutral more often than not.
Or you tap weird ones?
I
hate that.
And you accidentally tap it and you're manual, you don't know, and you're accelerating and you're going to the red line and bouncing off the rev limiter because you forgot, because you're a nunce like me and you've tapped it. So it's,
The way I think about this car is, so it costs... The X5M costs about $50,000 less than an M5, and the X6M costs about $100,000 less than the M6. These cars are bigger, they're more practical, and because they've got all-wheel drive with fully variable torque distribution between the axles, they actually put the power down better than the rear drive M5 and M6. So they're bigger, more practical, better at putting the power down, and a hell of a lot cheaper than the more conventional hardcore sedan and coupe models in the BMW range. So for me, they make a perverse kind of sense considering they look like such nonsensical cars.
But they're not sports cars. They don't make you feel like you're driving a sports car. They make you feel like you're operating this starship that can just go and stop with amazing kind of speed.
Well, 0 to 100 in 4.2 seconds for a car that weighs 2.3 tons.
That's amazing.
I mean, but that's as quick as a Porsche 911 almost.
And even though the steering is... It's progressive and it's nicely weighted and all that sort of stuff. You don't feel like you're engaged with the vehicle in the way that sports cars should, in the way that most BMW M cars do. So I don't think it even deserves the M badge on that car. Seriously, just as an aside, they could BMW normally puts a M badge in front of their cars, like M3 and M6. But if they put it in front of this one, it'd be the MX5, and
awkward.
This car couldn't be the more polar opposite of an MX5. That's the M. And we've got to talk about the X6 as well. I just want to add, the X6 costs $8,800 more. It weighs 10 kilograms less. The rear seat packaging is not as good because it's got the sloping roofline that makes it look like a SsangYong cat Kyron. And it has something like 70 litres less luggage capacity. That's pointless. That car to me is utterly pointless. I just buy an X6 twin turbo diesel, which has almost as much torque.
Triple turbo diesel, whatever.
Yeah.
So, but see, I think differently to you. I actually think that when you're talking about nonsensical cars like this, you may as well go the whole hog and get the really, really ridiculous version thereof. So, you know, both these cars are kind of dumb in a good way for me, and maybe in a not so good way for you, Byron. But if you're gonna do it, go all out. Get the one that looks vaguely like a sedan /coupe/SUV. I mean, it's polarizing. I happen to think it looks okay. Most people really hate it, and that's maybe one of the reasons why I sort of like it.
Do you know what's funny though? I drove the launch for the normal X6 range whenever that was a few months back in Australia. And I've really turned a corner on that vehicle because that first generation X6 I found to be absolutely foul. And now the new one, I think with those sharper kind of lines, I feel like it's a bit more resolved. I don't know. I can't explain it. I've turned a corner on the X6. I also find it's pointless.
Turned the stomach on the X6.
You did.
I hate the look.
Let me ask you both, though. Is it weird driving a car that sits up higher that is an SUV at that speed? Is there any sense of like, oh, God, well, even though it's got all-wheel drive and all that?
I mean, I think we have differing opinions again. I think this isn't quite as sharp as a Porsche Cayenne, which actually seems to defy physics with the way that it handles.
Yep.
And I've driven that thing on a racetrack. It's amazing. The X6M, the X5M, for me, yes, the transfer of weight and the general body control isn't as good as an M3 or M4. It can't be because there's such a thing as physics. But for me, the fact that it's got adjustable damper means that it feels relatively tied down. Relatively
and
tied down.
You will be seeing your chiropractor in no time because I hated the ride so much. And then I got queasy and there's a lot of the thing pitched and I just felt car sick. And that was me driving it. And then when I was a passenger with the lovely Mel Flynn. Hi, Mel. It just made me feel even worse. So
basically...
I don't know. I think we have to agree to disagree on that one. Yeah. I thought it was all right.
It's not a sports car at all. It doesn't deserve the M badge. And it, yeah, as I said earlier, it looks like a hat full of aspirin.
It sounds like you would prefer a Solario. That's what I'm hearing.
You could have, what, how many Solarios could you have? You could have 14 Suzuki Solarios.
Yeah, exactly.
15. You could have a fleet of Solarios.
I was on the X6 launch some months ago when the pre-M X6 launch, and I was in a car park somewhere in Hillsville, and I saw a Nissan Leaf, and I happen to own a Nissan Leaf as well. I love those cars. I went to speak to the driver, and then I realised I was in a BMW X6, and I got so embarrassed. I actually just didn't, because how could I have expressed to him, "Oh, look, I believe in cars like yours," when I'm driving an X6? Sorry, guys. Sorry, BMW, but you know, luckily you make the i3 and the i8 and all those excellent other cars.
Well, on that note, we have a text in from somebody. Thank you for whoever it is. Yes, the Tesla. We were talking about the Tesla before and how wonderful that is. Yes, the Tesla is great, except... Sorry, Byron, I'm using the same thing there. I need to read that.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Are we talking about the computer or that other thing?
The other thing. Yes, the Tesla is great, except the exhaust pipe is in the Latrobe Valley.
Well, most of it is, not all of it. Let's face it.
Yes, we get our power from coal largely, but Tesla can't control where a country's power comes from. It's not up to the car company to establish an entire power network for a country. It's up to a car company to work within the constraints that it has to work within. Really, you're asking Tesla to change Australian policy towards renewable energy.
I hope they do.
I think it's more a comment on that. And I think, you know, hopefully the government will actually start looking at that.
Oh, but totally. And I would say one thing for Tesla is they're setting up superchargers, which is their fast chargers all across the East Coast, which is, you know, all these giant car companies like Audi have been saying they won't do it. And Tesla, little Minnow, comes in and does it. And they've already opened a few. So
I'm loving that. I love that they've just come in and gone, "We're not going to wait for the government,
all
guys."
All along, the likes of BMW, Mercedes, Audi have been saying, "Look, we're not going to do it until there's proper infrastructure." They've got all the money in the world. Tesla just does it.
Well, and you know what?
Yeah.
You know, well, and if I may just connect the two together, when Tesla releases its X6M rival or X5M rival in its Model X SUV that has similar performance yet has zero tailpipe emissions and looks like a Tesla and feels like a Tesla, then that's when I'm going to be in love with vehicles like this.
Oh, there you go.
So that's something for next year, listeners. The minnows are rising. So, just like Terminator and the ARP.
That's it. Now, we've had a couple of other texts. The lovely Mark from Escape Pod has texted in. So happy to hear you back on air. So,
thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mark. And the lovely Tristan as well has texted in. Hi, guys. I'm loving the show, listening with a nice glass of wine.
Oh,
I'm a little bit jealous of Tristan.
So am I, yes.
And I've got a feeling I'm probably going to go home and do exactly that very shortly.
You put the ass in glass.
That's right. Boys... We've got to shut it down. It's time to go.
No.
Byron Matthew Darkus, Mike Costello, boys, thank you so much. Oh,
thank you for having us, and thank you for letting us be on your show as well.
Oh, as look, always. Look. It's been a hoot. It's been a hoot. And I would suggest that everyone should absolutely stick around because Techno Gaze is up with Michael and the gang. So make sure you are tuned to Joy 94.9. We're going to be back next week. That's me signing off. My name is Tim Nicholson. Safe driving.
Bye.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.